From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Today we bring you a conversation with journalist Margaret Kimberly, a regular columnist at BlackAgendaReport.com with a weekly column entitled Freedom Rider. She's the author of a new book entitled Presidential, Black America and the Presidents, which will be out February 4th, and it discusses the history of the United States and the relationship of that history with the condition of people today. Margaret, long time no talk to.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, and welcome back.
Thank you.
Very pleased to have you. Congratulations, a whole book. A book.
Yes, it's quite an effort, but I'm very happy that I got a good publisher and it all worked out. It's been a rewarding experience.
For me, seeing that you're going to be communicating these ideas that we're going to discuss to a mass audience, and you're doing it through the machinery of, among others, people like Jeff Bezos, I get a particular pleasure out of watching him basically have to set, selling them their own rope or whatever it was that they used to say back in the day.
Sell them the rope they'll hang themselves
with.
Exactly. For those who have issues with Amazon, you can buy Presidential through the publisher, Steerforth Press. So you can go to steerforthpress.com and order the book there.
Right. And actually, let's start with that. The title of the book is Presidential. It's sort of an amalgamation of prejudice and presidential.
Mm-hmm.
Black America and the Presidents is the subheading. And Margaret
yes.
Kimberly is the author, and that's who we're speaking with. And so it says, I saw this interview that said Black Agenda Report, and it says, it quotes you as saying that the book demonstrates that the history of enslavement followed by American apartheid segregation has permanently disfigured politics in this country. So that's basically the ugly stick that we see evidence of every day when we watch things from people getting bombed by drones to maniacs with a clown show on TV while people starve to death, etc. This is the natural product of the things that came before. I mean, you want to maybe fill us in on some details?
Sure. It's the history of this country is it's very clear. This is a settler colonial state. Settlers came from Europe, decimated the indigenous population, and then brought Africans as enslaved people. With that history of the country, then what follows cannot be positive. You have a country that is inherently racist. You have a country who whose history is a litany of atrocity, a litany of oppression, and even when there appeared to be successes, as in the 1960s with the liberation movement, as usually referred to as the civil rights movement, even then there was an immediate reaction. The mass incarceration state began to be built in earnest after that occurred. And even though Americans can all vote, it's still in a system that is made to thwart the interests of many people in the country. So as a result of this history, we have a political system where one political party is designated as the White People's Party. That was the Democrats for most of, for about 100 years after the Civil War. The Republicans were the party of Lincoln. The Democrats were the party of the segregated South. Then after the liberation movement, things switch and the Republicans become the White People's Party. And what this means is that Black people are very much restricted in our political activities. We have one party that we depend upon and another party who that we fear and want to keep out of office. So here we are at this late date in history in 2020, And the Democratic Party has failed its people, lost over 1,000 seats while Obama was in office, lost an election in the Electoral College, Hillary Clinton being defeated by Donald Trump. And yet, Trump especially is seen as this existential threat. So the imperative to keep Republicans out of office is even greater. But we have pretty much silenced ourselves. And we'll see the first primary, I guess the Iowa caucus is just in a couple of weeks. And we will see, once again, my prediction is that black people will sit on the sidelines and wait to see which Democrat does best before making a decision about whom to support.
Right.
Not saying we should support this one or we should support that one, but just who is best able to defeat this white people's party.
Right.
And that's the story of our history since 1865. In the late 1800s, it was we have to support the Republicans and keep the party of reaction, the Democrats, out of office. Even when most of white America lost interest in fighting for black people, it was all about the Republicans and keeping them in. Even when there were betrayals on their part, even when the Supreme Court would declare a Civil Rights Act unconstitutional and the Republicans did nothing, the Democrats were always worse. And then, of course, you would see someone like Woodrow Wilson, who was an unreconstructed Southerner who segregated the city of Washington, segregated the federal workforce, who had the movie Birth of a Nation shown in the White House, which sort of proved the point. But so now we could fast forward to the modern era, and what do we get? We have to always support the Democrats. So Bill Clinton, black people helped get Bill Clinton into office. And what do we get? We get a man who, under the guise of reforming welfare, did away with the 60-year right to public assistance, who started the mass incarceration state, who during his campaign left the campaign trail to execute a black man who was mentally disabled. That's what we get with Democrats. This is a long history. I think the book explains where we are now. It not only gives, I devote a chapter to each president and their relations with black people, but that's where the road leads to this sad story in the present day.
You know, when you look at the point of departure, for example, it seems almost inevitable. You had supposedly a great compromise at the time of the Constitution that is portrayed in our history, at least the anecdotal version of it that we're taught in grade school and high school, that and even some college courses. That it was pretty evenly divided between North and South and the slave and anti-slave sentiment in the country. But actually, you had, if that's true, you had, maybe two or three tons of thumbs pushing down on one side of the scale, because
yes,
10 of the first 12 presidents were slaveholders, for example.
Yes.
And Lincoln was the 16th president. So that means, up to Lincoln's time, that 10 of the first 16, if there weren't another one or two thrown in there, were slaveholders, meaning a lot more than half. That was, the cradle of the institutional state. And then, if you look coming all the way through following this strategy, on the one hand, it culminates, at least, up until right before Trump, in the election of America's first black president, quote-unquote, on the one hand, success. On the other hand, however, the loss of property by black folks, of the wealth accumulated over this whole sordid history, more wealth stolen from them than ever in the history of the country post-slavery. So it's like, even following this, if you're successful following the strategy, you fail. I mean, we point out that the success, quote-unquote, by electing Clinton in the 90s ends up with the, enhancement, certainly, if not the creation of the incarceration state and all of the other things that you listed. It's like it's a game that is rigged no matter who wins. It's like no matter who wins, people lose. Black people lose,
yes,
in particular.
Yes, we will, in all probability, we're going to lose again in 2020. But from the beginning, there was always this accommodation with, in those days, the what was called the slaveocracy. The fact right. that the city of Washington was built, a new city was built, located within the boundaries of the plantation economy, tells you everything you need to know. George Washington was inaugurated in New York City. That was the first capital. Then it kept moving further south. Then it was in Philadelphia. And then there was a decision made to build a new capital. Why do you need a new city? There were already cities. But they wanted, and Washington had a personal problem with the capital being in Philadelphia. He and his wife owned, I believe, upwards of 150 people. Pennsylvania had passed a law saying any enslaved person in the state for a certain number of days, I believe it was 6 months, would be free. So Washington had a problem. So what he did is he rotated his enslaved people. So as soon as they got close to that six-month period, he'd send them back to Virginia, and he'd send somebody else up. This shows the difficulty they had in maintaining this system unless the capital were protected and was it within the boundaries of the slaveocracy. So they build a new capital on a swamp for that purpose.
And this, the location was supposed to be, well, I mean, I think it's a good reflection of this. It was supposed to be in a place, not in any state. It was ceded right. from Maryland and Virginia, right?
Yes, yes, it is. It's Washington is located between those two states. But the whole point of doing that, of having this, of continuing to move a city further and further, a capital further and further south, and then right. building a city from scratch.
Right.
Tells you the importance, as you talk about the thumb being on the scale,
right.
it was most definitely on the side of the slaveocracy. The right. Constitution is a pro-slavery document. The doctrines of enslaved people were three-fifths of a person
right.
to make sure that the South got representation for these people who had no citizenship rights at all.
Right.
The fact that there was a fugitive slave law from right. the beginning. All of these things. This is a story of accommodation to the worst, most racist elements in the country. And it continues actually to this day.
The Electoral College as well is another vestige of that.
Yes, it is. And so we have I think it's funny, Americans go on and on about having a democracy. We have this system that lets the loser win.
Yeah,
you know, Trump got fewer popular votes, George W. Bush did, but and yet they became president. And the Democrats don't complain because they are adherents to this doctrine as well. They want to be members of the permanent government. They don't really want to fight for what is right, to fight for democracy, and definitely with Gore, the election was stolen from him.
Right.
But even with Trump, there was no Florida-like situation. But little by little, voting rights have been chipped away. The
right.
enforcement provisions of the Voting Rights Act declared unconstitutional. And voter suppression is a huge problem in many states. So we don't know how many of those votes, those states that flipped, how many people didn't vote because they couldn't vote anymore. But there's no voice
right.
for those people who've been disenfranchised.
Right.
And I'll, you know, veer a little bit away from the book. There is a battle now in Wisconsin to purge the polls of the rolls of 200,000 people who've allegedly moved. This is one of the most common ways of disenfranchising people. And it's not an issue. Wisconsin is a must-win state for Democrats. And they haven't said anything. Unless you're one who follows this topic and you stay on top of things, you have no idea this is happening.
That's right.
But
it's not in the media anywhere. It's not. And, you know, coming into 2016, for example, there was the entire primary season where it was, there was clearly some nefarious stuff going on with the both up to the election, people being stricken from the rolls. I think there were 300,000 people just in Brooklyn Oh, absolutely.
Well, that is a huge scandal. That is something that I am convinced was done. I think they were terrified that Hillary Clinton was going to lose her state, was going to lose her adopted state, was going to lose New York to Bernie Sanders.
Right.
And they took people off the rolls.
Yep.
But there was a deal made to keep this secret. The then Attorney General, Eric Schneiderman, cut a deal. They restored people to the rolls, but they never explained what happened, how this happened. And that is that's something I would love to see come to light. But I think most people know what happened. That's there was all kinds of chicanery in 2016, and it's continuing now. So but this legacy is a long one of a fake democracy. It's a funny thing. Americans, I think most people want to be positive about their country. Mm. And I'm not against people being positive, but it can't be a sham positive feeling. It has to be about things that are real.
Right.
Instead of making these 45 people, turning them into saints, it's necessary to talk about how horrible some of them were.
Yeah.
But one of the reasons we don't know is that a lot of historians and biographers have covered up for them. I learned many things, and it was not that difficult getting the information. It's not top secret that, yes, Lincoln was the president who wanted to preserve the Union. He did not care about whether slavery ended or not, and his goal was always colonization, that is, sending black people out of the country. He spoke of colonization up until the last weeks before he was assassinated. He never gave that up. There was actually a colonization scheme in Haiti, which for various reasons failed, but that was his goal, to send black people out of the country and keep this a white person's nation. But this is something that is easy to discover, but it's something very few people know. And they know because it's intentionally hidden. And I think that does the country, does us all a great disservice. That's one of the reasons it's so difficult to get change in this country, because people, most people don't see a reason for fundamental change. They see something or some things they would like to be different, and think they can just nibble around the edges and come up with a just society, when it really is fundamentally flawed and can't be fixed without an honest telling of history.
You know, you mentioned Lincoln, for example, and some of the things that he said actually are even worse than you just described. You're being generous here. And Clinton is also FDR.
Mm-hmm.
People are, you know, tend to think of FDR as, you know, someone that was a great benefactor of black folks in the United States. And that's not necessarily the case either, is it?
No. Well, he was a Democrat, and at that time, he depended on the Southern segregationists for political support, and that was always his excuse for not passing anti-lynching legislation. That never, after struggles over several decades, that never happened. He would say, well, my hands are tied. There's nothing much I can do. So, for example, when the Social Security Act was passed, it exempted agricultural work and domestic work. Well, what did most black people do for a living?
Right.
Because then, as now, most black people lived in the South, and that's what most people did.
Right.
And it was groundbreaking, the beginnings of a welfare state in this country, but black people were exempted from its benefits. There's a story in the book that Thurgood Marshall related. At the time, he was an attorney with the NAACP. He went to FDR's attorney general for assistance with the case, and the attorney general, to his credit, called FDR, but Thurgood Marshall was on the other end of the line and heard FDR say, I don't want to hear about Eleanor's niggas anymore, and if you do this again, you're fired.
Ooh.
So that was the real FDR. Eleanor helped with her PR. You know, at a time when black people were rendered so invisible, it was a big deal.
Right.
For Marian Anderson to sing at the Lincoln Memorial, or for Mary McLeod Bethune to have lunch with her, but it basically was a lot of photo ops of of Eleanor Roosevelt being nice to black people, and that's pretty much as far as it went. He did pass some tepid civil rights legislation related to the employment in the defense industries, but that's because A. Philip Randolph threatened to have a march on Washington. And so we see this pattern where black people thrive and change the system for themselves for the better when there is mass demand.
It says in this interview, now I'm back at blackagendareport.com, in the interview about the book that you did with Roberto Servent, it's... that while you were doing your research, even though you had known that some of these horrible things had happened, the extent of the lies that were told by historians and biographers was worse than you thought before you started looking into it, that you found a more horrid situation, basically, than that which originally compelled you to begin the book.
Yeah, well, so, for example, someone like Harry Truman, he was a Democrat who got black support after being in the FDR's administration. He was a Klansman. At one point, he belonged to the KKK. And Missouri was a segregated state. It's one of those states that was slaveholding but didn't join the Confederacy. But make no mistake about where its politics were. He when it was discovered he was a member of the Klan, which was very popular back in the 20s, by the way, he claimed that he was threatened, and someone threatened to kill him if he didn't join the KKK. So this man who is generally regarded as being good for black people, and there are reasons for that, he came from his parents, or perhaps it was his grandparents, were all slaveholders, his wife's family as well, in Independence, Missouri. He wrote letters to his wife to their credit. His family did not censor them. He talked about chasing black people out of town, out of Independence. He is the one who began the persecution of Paul Robeson. Paul Robeson did get a meeting with Truman, he and an anti-lynching group. But Paul Robeson, being who he was, he didn't back down. Demanded that Truman do something. Truman sort of said he would try or something, which wasn't good enough for Robeson. Anyway, Truman stalked out of the meeting in a huff, and that's when Paul Robeson's persecution began. When they took his passport for many years and deprived him of making a living and kept him from leaving the country. And this was, of course, at the beginning of the Red Scare. So those are the things that and Truman did desegregate the military, but Eisenhower was opposed to that. He was very much opposed to that. He was also a segregationist. So these are the kinds of things that we are not taught. Eisenhower told the Supreme Court Justice, Warren, I was almost blanked on his name.
Earl Warren.
About desegregating the schools, he said, well, you know, white people just don't want their kids sitting next to some overgrown or something along those lines. I'm paraphrasing. So this is what we have been living with for the past 200 years. We have a system where people who are, and it's not just that they are personally racist, but that they are upholding this system, this settler colonial state, which I would argue demands that the people in this persecuted group remain at the bottom. And that's where we are now. And I think you can see that history through the stories of the presidents.
You know, with Truman, it gets me. It was during his time as president, and you had Tom Clark as an attorney general and some others. McCarthyism, pre-McCarthy, really got its, got underway. And what they were doing was fishing back to people's pasts in the 20s and 30s if they had any involvement with the Communist Party whatsoever, or anyone who had been involved with the Communist Party. That was cause for suspecting them and driving them out of work and out of government, et cetera, et cetera. Where the President of the United States, however, is a member of the Klan back then, and no one has a problem with that or even knows about it.
That's true. It's, yes, very selective outrage, isn't it? But that's what we are. Yeah, that's the story of this book. And, you know, most of these people ask me, who do I think the worst president was? And the choice I always come up with is Andrew Jackson, who drove Native Americans out of the Southeast in order to accelerate the establishment of the plantation economy, and who was a slaveholder himself also. He's my choice, but the rest of them are just less bad. It's like a scale of who is less bad than the other. Ronald Reagan, I think, was very bad. He is the one who attacked the very foundation of public the power of the federal government to act in the lives of people. I think he was very bad. But then you have people like Kennedy, who, and then still he chose a Southerner, Lyndon Johnson, as his running mate. Yeah. He did not want the March on Washington. Bobby Kennedy hated the March on Washington. Yeah. He thought it was all a plot against his brother. And he made terrible comments about it, and they let it go through after watering it down. It was supposed to be this poor people's march, and it was supposed to be a very revolutionary thing. Then it turned into a march for voting rights, and I'm not saying that was a bad thing, but it was not what the original thought was about this demonstration. And the Kennedys started, they went along with J. Edgar Hoover in surveilling Martin Luther King and bugging his phone. And there's an article in Black Agenda Report this week about they even spied on Coretta King. She has a 500-page file in the FBI archives.
Yeah, that's just what's been released.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. That's true.
Who knows what's been burned or whatever, you know? And we had to go through the church hearings and God knows what else where somebody thought, oh my God, this horrible thing that I did is going to be exposed, and oops, it's gone from the playing field. The book has 45 chapters. It's perfect, right? It's like one for each president, although that's not how it's laid out. And covers an awful lot of ground, obviously, from soup to nuts, 1790, I guess, our first president, or 1791, to now. Without giving away any more, people have to get the book. How did it help you looking at what can happen, like envisioning a change, envisioning a new world?
I think we have to recognize that we cannot do what we've been doing and expect a different result. I think that we need to have a strong left party, a real left party in this country. That's not the Democrats. The duopoly is not our friend. And what do we get if we get a Democrat instead of Republican? We get Bill Clinton doing away with public assistance as a right. We get Barack Obama assassinating Gaddafi and turning Libya into a slave state. No. So we have to look at what do we really get? And we have to have fundamental change, something transformational, something revolutionary. That's what we need, and not this litany of defeat and betrayal with some victories thrown in here and there. And I think now it's especially important for Black people to stop obsessing about Trump. Or actually, if you're going to obsess about Trump that much, you should really, there needs to be a serious critique of the Democratic Party and their failures, which led to Trump being elected. And that means questioning this relationship we have with politics, where we cling to one party in hopes that it will protect us from the worst party. We can and should, and we must do something different. And this is a perfect year to get started.
Margaret, thank you very much. Pleasure.
Thank you, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.